Welcome to the Retired Excited Podcast. Retired Excited, the show where we give retired and want to be retired folk a look at how great retired life can be. Here we talk to men and women who are happily retired and loving their life. We explore the techniques, activities, beliefs, and excitement of these happy retirees and examine how every Tom, Dick, and Mary can benefit from their experience. Together, we will delve into what retired happiness really looks like and how anyone can achieve it.
Here is your host, Henry Shapiro.
Hey folks, Henry here at Retired Excited, the show providing inspiration for people who are nearly retired, newly retired, or say they're never going to retire. If you're nearing retirement and fearful of what lies ahead, you don't need to be. If you're already retired and wondering how to fill your days, then this show is exactly for you. Here we talk to retired people doing things that make them happy. Things from stamp collecting to cruising, from dancing to touring the world on a motorbike. There's an exciting stage of life to be enjoyed after full-time work, and it's got nothing to do with your financial situation or social position. We talk to everyday retired people who are living the life they want, and we talk to a few professionals to get expert advice. And I chip in with some of my own experiences. Hi there, folks. Henry here with episode number 30 of Retired Excited. Got a fabulous interview for you today. But before I tell you who the guest is going to be, I just want you to have a think about this. There are people in this world who strive for achievement and people who strive for fulfillment. Now, I'm not saying that those are opposite ends of a scale. They're just two goals or two things. Not quite sure how to explain those. But when I looked up the dictionary, I looked up achievement and it led towards the word attainment. When I looked up fulfillment, it led towards the word accomplishment. I want you to think about this. I want you to think about those words as we go through the interview today. We're going to talk to a lady, an 87-year-old lady, and her name is Dorothy Nicol. Dorothy lives in Lismore in Victoria in Australia, and I've spoken about Lismore a few times because I used to have a farm which was adjacent to the town of Lismore, and that's how I knew Dorothy and Ted Goodacre, who I have interviewed in the past, and Margaret Cook. You'll find those interviews if you go to the podcast page in the menu. Anyhow, I started out talking to Dorothy about an amazing collection that she has of gowns and dresses. Over the years, she's collected a significant number, well, thousands, it's in the thousands, of 20th century dresses and gowns. She loves the 20th century, and more or less the middle of the century is where her interest lies. And so all the gowns that she has collected, and some of them have been donated, some she's purchased at opportunity shops and got them from here and there, they've all got a story. But later on in the interview, it turned into something else. Started out talking about the collection, and then it turned into her memories and the history of the town, and it's really interesting. So here's Dorothy's story. We're in a very strange building. What's the building we're in?
This is the Masonic Lodge.
So what happened? Obviously the Masons aren't here anymore.
They disbanded because of lack of membership. It was just at a time when I'd left Green Gables because of illness. Mm-hmm. I'd been in and out of hospital for about 4 years. I loved Green Gables so much. When I was a child, I wanted to live there. In the 1980s, when I had retired and was looking for, I wanted to do something for Lismore. I thought that'd be a great little tourist place. That's how I started A Touch of Childhood, Green Gables, A Touch of Childhood. Yes. Well, I had to sell it because, as I said, I didn't want to see it run down and I couldn't afford
To keep it going. Yeah. Green Gables, listeners, was a store in a side street, and we're in the little town of Lismore. You've heard me talk about Lismore a few times. And Dorothy ran, as she said, A Touch of Childhood, which had dolls, and what other things did you have?
It was everything in the early 20th century, the furniture, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Oh, it was a lovely place. Beautiful.
So have you lived in Lismore all your life?
Yes, I was born here, and I love Lismore. I'm so happy. I'm in Lismore. I just can't understand why people don't come back to their old hometown.
Yes,
but that's another story. And I wanted to be able to say I earn my pension and bring buses and things like that, if I could, to the town. It's been a great journey.
Am I allowed to ask how old you are?
You're allowed to ask me anything. I just don't have to answer, do I?
That's great.
But 87's the answer.
Are you really 87? So you've been here 87 years?
Yes.
What was it like back in the old days?
Oh, fabulous. Oh, everybody knew each other. Everybody hopped in and helped each other. There was the annual ball was my forte. The season started about July, August, and went on till November. And every organisation, Red Cross, hospital, football, you name it, all had their annual ball. And it was a good old-fashioned where the girls...
Was there a series of balls?
Yes.
And so there was like a ball season.
Yes, a ball season. And just recently I made this, what I think is a fabulous way to do a fashion parade. The hall, the ball, the gown and the music. And we did a film on it. I haven't seen the film yet, but I'm hoping it turns out. And there's a love story in the film. Like when it's 100 years of history. And in it, there's a soldier goes to war. And
who made the film?
My granddaughter is a Shakespearean tutor. And so she's got contacts. When I told her the story, she said, "Gran, that brings a tear to my eye." That's, she said, "We're going to do a film on it."
And the hall, the ball,
the gown, and the music.
Fantastic.
Yes, and it ends up with Slim Whitman singing. I've done it so many times, and I still choke up. It's stupid.
She has a hand on her chest at the moment, folks, and getting a bit cheap.
Yeah, always. When I grow too old to dream.
Yes, I know it well. I know the
song
well.
Yes, well, see, the chap, they dance, and everybody goes off stage, and he sits there dreaming of his girl.
His love.
I've got this fabulous wedding gown that when I saw it, I said, I've got to have that. I got it at an op shop. The Shire asked me to do something in Skipton for Seniors Week. Just take a few models and just dress them. I said, can I do what I like? He said, yes. And that's just when it came to me. That's what I want to do. So I got all teed up and went into Camperdown to tell Camperdown what I was going to do. When I didn't have the courage to keep going, I thought, oh, no, they'll think I'm silly. So anyhow, I dropped the idea. But a little while later, I met the lady in the street that I meant to speak to. I thought, I meant to do it. I've got to say it. So I plucked up the courage and told her what I wanted to do about this hall, the ball, the gown and the music up in Skipton. So we went away and worked it all out and got the models.
Am I right in saying that it's already happened, it's been done?
Yes, this was 4 years ago, the first one.
I beg your pardon. Yes.
And
how was it received?
And I was looking after the music and I was making such a hash of it. But anyway, we kept going, we battled through it. I thought, oh dear, I was dreading going on stage when you have to go on to be thanked. But I walked on stage and I got a standing ovation.
Oh, fantastic.
They got the message, they said the music, then they understood it. I'd never done anything like that before. So that gave me the courage to keep trying. So I've done it 3 times now. But the last time was just magic because I'd told Lisa, and that's when she said the idea was good. And she had professional contacts. We did it in Ballarat Federation weekend.
What a great thing. So you've done this really to put the Western District and Lismore out
on
there.
The map. Yeah, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Let me go back to your early life again. You were born here. Did you go to school here?
Oh, yes. Rode our bicycles 3 miles, 3.5 miles in and 3.5 miles out. There was a headwind in the morning and there was a headwind at night. Oh, and I loved sport. I think I went to school for sport.
Right.
But however...
And then you worked here somewhere, I believe.
It was during the war. Mm-hmm. Dad, he was out of work. The war broke out and he was able to go joined the army and we had a normal life. But we were happy as children. Our mum and dad never let on that things were so tough.
So what did you work at later on?
But then, and so mum sent me to Colac High School while dad was still away. I came back home and he came out of the army, and at that time people who had been in the army got first choice of jobs, and he knew that about the telephonist vacancy there. I got the job through dad being in the army, and that was the only job I ever had. I was 16.
Tell me about the job. I know what it is, but tell the listeners what it was.
Telephonist?
Being a telephonist in those days, what was it like?
There was a switchboard and they had all the numbers, and when a subscriber rang, a little shutter dropped.
Yes.
And you put the plug in and said, "Number, please." And the,
so this is a manual switchboard.
Manual switchboard, yes.
Like you see in the old movies, and you're plugging in plugs.
Yes. And to begin with, I was pretty shy because we'd never met people. We went to church and Sunday school. That was our only outing. Nobody ever came to our place because there wasn't many cars around or things like that. We had to go by bicycle. I went to one picture show all my life till I was 16. So I was pretty naive, and but I grew into the job and stayed there till I got married in 1950.
We're sitting here, folks, in the Masonic Lodge, in the lodge room, as it happens, and it's crammed with... mostly ladies' frocks, but there's a few men's safari suits and bits and pieces and shawls, but mostly frocks. Tell us about how this all started. How did you start a collection of this amazing...
I wanted to make it a social history of the Western District. So I started buying... Oh, that was what it was. When I retired, I had no money. I had nothing. What am I going to do with myself? Oh, this house that I wanted to live in as a child that I'd... I just loved that house, Green Gables. That's what I called it, Green Gables. I went to the bank and when I retired and asked, could I borrow the money? Do you know how much the house cost me? $22,000. So the bank manager, he knew me anyhow, he said, yes, I could get a loan. That's how it started with all those kids' things.
Yes.
I hid behind the door when I set it all up, to see the look on the kids' faces, because I knew that way it's going to go or not. And they were all smiling and happy that they were there. And then I just collected. Now, that's what I was trying to say. What am I going to... I found a poem. It was called The Vagabond. When I have a house, as I sometime may, I'll suit my fancy in every way. I'll fill it with things that have caught my eye, travelling from somewhere to Molokai. And I said, I can do it around the Western District, do all that. I can go to the auctions, I can go to the op shops, create something that might be interesting to people and bring people into town on buses and things like that.
How long ago did you start the collection?
1982. Hmm. That's...
Whatever.
Not yesterday, the day before.
Folks, you know that I lived in Lismore, and I knew Dorothy while I was living here. And at one stage, my mother-in-law was also here with us and got talking to Dorothy and said, oh, she had some of her old dresses and whatnot, and we donated them to Dorothy's collection. And people all around the district have given her stuff, and mostly it's things that have got a sentimental value to the people.
Yes.
I'm going to get on to that in a minute. So, all right, you're collecting bits and pieces here, and you went to opportunity shops and bought some bits as well.
And people at auction sales too.
Auction sales, yes. Yeah. People donated things to you. How many garments would there be here? Have you any
idea? Over 2,000.
2,000?
Yes. I haven't counted it for quite a while. But I must have been possessed or something, because one day, not so long ago, I had a second look. What have I been doing? There's dresses everywhere. I'm not a very professional. I never, ever wanted to be professional. I just wanted to be sentimental, I suppose, which is not very professional. And I rang universities and museums and places like that, and that you've got to do this and you've got to do that. Well, I didn't think I was capable of doing all that. I didn't think I
you talk
would
about
do it properly.
Cataloguing the
yes
the garments.
But
and so
it's
on.
Important. We have started cataloguing it. Yes, but I'm not the authentic. Whatever. I'm not like the galleries.
No.
And
no.
But I love them, and I wish I could have been, but I didn't. I wanted to just have people come in and have a nice feeling and go away. And they're allowed to touch. You're not supposed to touch, and I understand that because it's after a few years it begins to show.
Mm-hmm.
But I like to let them have a look and have a little, and they can touch. But we did do fashion parades, and over the years I raised about $75,000 for charity.
Goodness me, I had no idea.
Yeah.
From the parades that you were doing and from the
and
the show in Ballarat and so on. Yes.
Yes. I think the biggest one was at Ararat. It was called Wedding Bells, B-E-L-L-E-S. So they had a fashion parade of wedding dresses only. A dinner as well, $65 to get in. They made $22,000.
Amazing.
But they were a good committee that organised that.
And who were the models? Who wore the dresses?
Just the local girls off the street.
So they weren't professional models?
No.
And how did they do? Did they enjoy it? Did they do well?
Oh, yes. The girls always love it. I've had girls come in and try on the dresses for whatever they're doing. I wish I could do this every day. They're always, always amateur girls.
So you started early, you started building up a collection. And just tell us again, what was your purpose? What did you have in mind you were going to do with all these frocks?
I had no idea. I was like I felt as though I understood an alcoholic because I just had to. I'm not going to get any more. Oh, but just this one, you know. Yes.
It became an obsession for you, really.
Yes, it did. But I'm trying to control it now. But I'm finding it hard to make a date of when I should retire.
So have you got your second retirement in mind? You retired from work and now you're thinking about retiring from
this?
Yeah.
But you meet beautiful people.
Can you tell us about some of the people you've met?
Well, one lady, I remember, she came in by herself. She was from Geelong. And she looked around and I let her go, just looking around. And then we had a chat afterwards and she said, "If I ever come to live in Lismore, can I come and work with you?"
Isn't that nice?
And it's nice, yes. Yeah. I get a lump in my throat occasionally.
Yeah.
Thinking of the nice feelings I know they get when they go away.
What about the garments themselves? Can you tell me about any particular garments?
Yes, there's several.
Have they got stories?
There's a lovely story with the... the yellow one? A lady who was living in Lismore, she brought some dresses down, and her father was in the British Navy, British Army, I'm sorry, in Singapore, Changi. It was an English Army depot then. And she brought me this lovely yellow net sequin dress, the Dior look. The wives of the officers had to dress for dinner every night, and so they had to wear these dresses. There was a yellow one and a green one. That's one of the nice stories.
I asked you whether you had something worn by a lady dyer as a joke.
I was just about to tell you that one.
No, she hasn't, folks. But close.
The lady from Derrinullum, her husband was the Shire president. They were invited to the Hyatt in Melbourne when Prince Charles and Lady Diana were out here. So, and then just on the phone the other day, I had another phone call from a girl who used to live in Derrinullum. And actually, her father and I were born at the same time. We were babies in the Lismore Hospital at the same time, 87 years ago. She had a dress there, she said, that she'd carried around for years. That belonged to her mum. Her mum and dad had been invited to, I can't remember where the affair was, but it was when the Queen Mother and Prince Philip were out here in 1950s, when she opened Parliament. And so I've yet to see that one, but she said that she wanted to get rid of it and would I like it? And I said, yes, please.
I know that the emphasis for you has been on collecting dresses from the Western District, because that's where we are. We're in the Western District.
Yes, nearly everything is from the Western District, yes. There's some from McKinnon. She'd been Claire Adams, the American film star.
Oh.
I've got some of hers. Claire lived out at Karenballock. When I first came back to the country from the city, the people who ran the property, the lady of the house was my best friend. And she invited me over to the McKinnon home quite often because Mrs. McKinnon wouldn't be there. I wished later on that I had visited her because they told me that she was a bit lonely in later life and would love to talk about her past. It would have been nice to have taken the children to just chat with her. Yeah. But when she died, they sent all the better things to the auctions in Melbourne, but they had a big sale. So I was able to go in and purchase some of the things they thought weren't so good. But at the present time, I can't show you because it's in Warrnambool at the art gallery. They're having a display of my things down there.
At the art gallery? Because Warrnambool's got a really beautiful and fairly new art gallery down there. So they're having a display of your garments.
Yeah. Yes. And some other garments are from the Grimmaid family in Lismore.
Yes. Mr. Grimmaid, and I can't think of his first name, was a member of Parliament, wasn't he?
I'm not sure that Mr. Grimmaid was, but we've had several parliamentarians here. But Mrs. Grimmaid's dress, that's in Warrnambool too, not a dress, an evening coat that she wore in the 1930s. Then her daughter has donated some of her things, so the Grimmaid family will be remembered.
The Grimmaids, and my memory is that the Grimmaids were great supporters of the town, weren't they?
They were fabulous, yeah.
They were in the days where people who had money
and
looked after their communities and put money into the communities.
Oh, yes. Yeah. We miss those people. But life changes, doesn't it? Things change. We had Mr. Gibson, who was the Postmaster General at one stage. Then there was Mr. Geoffrey Street, wasn't he the one who got killed in that terrible accident in August 1940?
It's before my time, Dorothy.
up in New South Wales, I'm not sure.
I don't know.
Yeah, there was Geoffrey Street, Thorntwaite, all these ministers of Parliament, killed in an air crash.
Okay, yes. I didn't know that. It's interesting, isn't it, because some of those names live on around here.
Yes.
Is Gibson still in the district? And
yes, there is. And Omen, on the front of the building, there's a memorial to Mrs. Omen, who donated the land for this lodge to be built. Well, he was a member of Parliament.
We're in a tiny little town.
Yes.
About 100 kilometres west of Geelong, and it's seen a lot of history around here.
Oh, it has a lot. Oh, yes, I went to Melbourne once with my friend, and we were walking along the beach at Williamstown. We met her university teacher, mentioned that I came from the Western District. He said, oh, the WD, you must own property. I said, oh, yes, I do, but it was only a house.
We've strayed a long way from
yes, we have got the history, haven't we? But that's what it's all about, the history. That's what I call it my social history. It would probably be historians that shudder, but it's my version of living in the 20th century. And that's what I'd say, my hobby is living in the 20th century. A mistake, I know, though I should have learnt the computer.
No, you shouldn't.
But it will depend on it entirely. I don't like it because it's so impersonal, perhaps that's the word, and I'm a bit of a dreamer.
Something I just wanted to say, and this has to do with the 20th century, and in particular, I think maybe around about the 50s, people were much more involved in their community.
Oh, yes.
And here in Lismore, the town wanted a swimming pool.
Yes, yes.
The local farmers used to plant crops along the roadside, as well as on their own properties, and the crops that were planted on the roadside, when they stripped them, the profit from that, they donated to build the swimming pool
in town.
Yes,
they did.
Yeah.
And now the Shire keeps trying to close it down, and we fight tooth and nail to save it.
That community, they didn't just donate, but they put in their time and their effort. It's astounding. Yes. You just don't get that much these days.
No.
No.
That's what I loved, to be involved. And when I came back, I got married in 1950 and left town and saw what the rest of the world was like. Lived in Mortlake for a while. Then I worked in Melbourne. It was the loneliest place on earth.
Was it too big for you?
Probably. I'd come home weekends and things, walk up the street, everybody says hello, and I'd go back to the lonely old Melbourne, wouldn't even smile at you as you walked by. But came back to Lismore, so I missed out from 1950 to 1975, I think. I missed out being here when that was on, but I was well aware of what was going on.
Another example is when the when the tsunami happened. Oh, golly, it must be 15 years or more ago now. The local farmers decided how can they support the people, and they decided to donate bales of hay. Do you remember this? And we're talking about 5-foot round bales, as they were, or as they still are. And people were donating bales, and so they'd bring them in and put them down on the showgrounds, and then on the fateful day, they auctioned them all off, and the money went off for the tsunami. And I think, I can't remember how much they raised, but it was about $8,000, I think.
Oh, goodness.
So there's a real community feeling
in
small country towns, isn't it?
Yes.
Quite different from being in Melbourne or in a big city.
Yeah. What makes me a bit sad now, people come here to live, but we never see them. The Pogies Association had invited, we give them all a little bag of goodies when they arrive.
Yeah.
That's okay. So they're aware of Progress Association. We sent an invitation to all newcomers. Not one answered. No one came to the little morning tea we'd arranged for them. I suppose
they've come from Melbourne and they're just not used to.
Their world comes with them. The computer. They don't need to mix, and they've got the mobile phones. What's it done to people?
Yeah. It's sad, isn't it? Yeah.
It is a way, because it's a great way of life, is to go for, get your groceries and meet and chat. My mum used to coach the tennis, the kids. She had 100 children on Saturday morning practicing. That's around the district. But we don't even have a tennis team anymore. Here's these lovely tennis courts down there. And there's cricket. And there's golf, there's a pool, there's football.
There's plenty to
there's
do.
There's tennis.
Yeah. Basketball for the girls.
Our forefathers were so wise in creating a community.
When I first came here, I was wondering what the young kids did. And I asked one of the kids on the street one day, you know, what do you do on the weekend? He said, we go down and watch the girls playing tennis.
Oh, did they? Why didn't they go and play tennis too? I love my tennis and my golf. I love that. I even won a little cup once.
At tennis or golf?
Tennis.
Tennis, you must
be. I won a medal. I loved my sport, but I wasn't brilliant, but I could really enjoy it.
Yes. Now, I just want to get back, when we were talking before we started recording, you were talking about confidence.
Oh, dear.
Now, you're naturally a shy person, I can tell, and people can tell just from your voice. How did you get the confidence to market this place, to put it out there and advertise it and so on?
Well, I'll tell you about the vulnerable fella.
Whatever you like. Because you've told me a few times that you weren't a confident person, really.
Oh, no. When I first went dancing, my friend one of the girls, the telephonist, said, why don't we go to the dance? I was about 17 and I'd never been to a dance then. I said, okay, but you've got to promise to dance with me because nobody will ask me to dance. we each wore a red Sunday sunray pleated skirt and a white shirt with bishop sleeves. And off we went to the dance. So we got up and we started to dance. And we got a tap on the shoulder. Each got a tap on the shoulder. Two other boys had decided that maybe they don't like us to dance with them. And after that, that was it.
You danced the night away.
Yes, we danced the night away. And I went home really happy. Mm-hmm. Somebody had asked me to dance. We mentioned the ball season before, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
Ball season. Yes. And that is one of the reasons why I love to collect ball gowns, because I must have about 150. See that one there? That belonged to, Stacey Keating, the golfer. She's on the world circuit, golf.
What I'm looking at is a full-length blue chiffon number.
Yes, that's right.
It's a fairly light blue with darker blue flowers printed on it.
Stacey's grandmother's. Her grandmother was 2 years younger than I am, and went to school together. And one day she rang up and she said, I've got some ball gowns in my wardrobe that they've been there for 20 years and I have no further use for them. Would you like them? And she brought them round to me. They're lovely.
What's the thing you like best about collecting and showing and
what
whatever?
What do I love best? Oh, goodness me, that's a good question. Hard to answer. It just reminds me. I know you shouldn't live in the past, but it just brings back memories. And I love memories. Right. Yes. I just love them.
And you've mentioned people a fair bit as well, as we've been
People. I love people. Everybody's special.
In what way?
One way is because everyone's different. I think everybody's got something. Sometimes it's a bit sad what they let happen to themselves. I had a lovely little poem once and I lost it. Don't make fun of the man who trips and stumbles along the road unless you've worn the shoes that he wears, or staggered beneath his load, and maybe nails in his shoes that hurt, though hidden away from you. But if your feet were in his shoes, would cause you to stumble too. Something like that went. Yes. And you can learn from almost everyone. Not a good idea to criticise. It's much more rewarding to give them a little bit of praise, because everyone likes to be encouraged rather than put down. When we were at school, I was good at sport. Other than that, I was just a quiet mouse-like creature. So nobody really knew what I was like. Perhaps that's not a bad thing. I don't know anybody that I really dislike. I sometimes don't think it's a good idea to do some of the things they do, but who am I to judge? Okay. And going to church and Sunday school didn't do me any harm, I'm sure.
And you're still involved with the church? Or not involved, but you're still going?
Funny thing, I learned to play the organ. I learned to play music for 1 year, about 1980-ish, because I loved organ music at that stage. I bought an organ, so I had to learn how to play it. So I learned it for a year, and a couple of years later, the church was without an organist. They asked, would I play? I said, well, I'm not very good, so I haven't been the permanent one until just lately. But I'm so glad that I was able to put to use what I did, because there was no one else there to do it. And it's not very much fun singing without music.
Do you find anything difficult about having this collection?
Oh, well, being a pensioner, there's never any cash. And I ever want to depend on money to make me happy. I've never, ever, because the Depression, And then my dear husband was a compulsive gambler, so there was never any money. The pension is adequate, but there's not much spare. So I'm just so thankful and grateful without having any money. Yeah. I just am amazed that I've led such a happy, full, interesting life with something out of nothing.
Yeah, when we spoke on the phone, you said to me, it's like a dream.
It is like a dream. I can't believe all those things lately that are happening. What do I say made me happy?
You've gone through life and then...
Oh, yes.
Sort of a bit later in life, things have started happening to you.
Yes, that I never dreamed of or never planned. One of the things that gave me some courage was when... There was one lady who used to come here, and after a while, she told me she just loved it. And she used to go away and talk about it, what I do, but she didn't tell me she did that. But word got to the Warrnambool Art Gallery that it would be a good idea to go and have a look and see what they thought. Well, they duly came, and the director of the art gallery, he was a very serious person, they said, and not very approachable. When he's walking in, he looked so much like the country squire. He was English, I think. But I mentioned without even thinking, you do look special, or something to that effect. You just look like the country squire. Well, that must have pleased him, I think, because later on when I asked him to, would he mind signing the visitor's book, I said, did you really like it? And he said, I loved it. And he wrote in the book. And so after that, I thought, oh, it must be okay if somebody like that, who knows all about art, etc., likes it, perhaps I can sort of be a bit more outgoing about things.
So that gave you a bit more comfort, gave you more confidence.
Yes, it gave me the heart to think, oh, well, it's not all just me. It's interesting for other people. Sometimes ladies would come and one of them said, this reminds me of my sister. She's got clothes everywhere. I don't know. It's being allowed to touch things and knowing the stories that go with the dresses. I think that's it, the stories that go with the dresses. Oh, I didn't mention RMIT, did I?
That was the next question. Talk to us about that.
RMIT.
RMIT is Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology, yes. Which used to be a technical college in the early days, but it's developed and developed. And now it's a university.
That's right, yes. Yeah, I should have said this much, much earlier. A lady from Terang who sort of took me under her wing, she'd been in theatre and art all her life. She called in when I was down at Green Gables and she must have been impressed on what she saw, and she got in touch with RMIT, Sylvia Walsh. Sylvia and Judy came back and had a look, and Sylvia decided to use my place for her to do her master's degree on. Well, I didn't know what was going on. I just went along with what they did. They came and took photos. Then I see later where they've sent things all over the world to France and Germany, photos and all that sort of thing. And then I'd get every now and again, I'd get asked for stories about the dresses. It wasn't till about 18 months ago, 2 years, that it began to dawn on me what had been happening and what is happening now, all the dresses with the stories and all that sort of thing. Sylvia sent me all the details all the time. I said, oh yes, oh yes. And all of a sudden, it all started to say, oh yes, that's what it meant. Oh yes. This is what it meant.
So your fame is worldwide now.
Yeah, and I don't even know it. I wasn't aware. That's how, I'm not going to say innocent, that's not the word, naive, and I'm a bit old to be naive. And another person who was a big help was a lady in Warrnambool. She was promoting this place everywhere she went. Early this year she had a week at one of the Ballarat galleries. All the people who took part in that exhibition were, they weren't allowed, they were dress sewers, but they weren't allowed to have a pattern. They had to make up their own pattern. Well, that was a great success. What made me very sort of humble was that she got her inspiration from my collection. Well, that was...
Isn't that lovely?
It was lovely. That's
a direct indication that you're doing good in the world, that someone's enjoyed it.
Yeah, yes, that people do get something special out of it. Yeah. It was really special.
Now, I'm going to delve into a question which might seem a bit cheeky of me, but you said you're 87 and that you're thinking about retiring. What's going to happen to this collection if you retire?
I'm taking it with me. Yes. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Enough said.
It's very difficult to... I don't want to leave it for somebody else to sort out. No doubt I'll make inquiries and get advice and do it properly, yes, and fairly to people, yes. Mm. And if anybody ever wanted back what they donated, they're welcome, because I don't sell anything. But I wouldn't knowingly sell anything that had been donated anyway.
Yeah. So then just finally, the podcast is about, or the show is about, what people do when they're at... when they retire.
Yes.
And you've started a collection. It's gotten out of control.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because you're a fanatic. What do you think people should do when they retire?
Oh, follow their heart, I'd say. But we were growing up, when we were growing up, you didn't follow your heart. You weren't supposed to be a dreamer. You were supposed to be realistic. But if you want to be happy, do what makes you happy. So long as you're not hurting anybody. I think, could I answer it any better than that?
I don't think you could. I don't think you could.
There's so many good things you can do. So I just want to stay here and try and hold on to some of the things we used to do. And it was so safe. You never locked your doors. When I was at De Green Gables, I got up one morning, went out to the shop, and the place was full of people. It was a busload of ladies from Queensland, and I'd left the key in the door all night. They just walked in. So I'm a bit careless, I suppose you'd call that one. I have to be honest to be so I'm careless. About trusting people, though, it was good. You could trust most people. You're not stupid, I suppose, and... not just trust unwittingly and get caught.
I'll wind up there. It's a brilliant collection, and it's terrific that you've been able to not just have it for yourself, like some people would have an art collection in their house that no one would ever see, but you've been able to take it out to the community and help the town with the money that you've raised with the various shows and everything. Mm. I think that's just absolutely wonderful. So thank you for all that work that you've done for the community, but thank you for speaking to us and... the listeners, I think, going to be delighted with this interview and with you.
But you give, well, you get back, don't you?
Yeah. That's right. Thanks again.
Thank you. Did you learn anything?
I learned lots of things. I had no idea that you'd raise so much money. I knew that you had the shows and, I've been to your...
Yes, I don't very often say that about the money. I'm pretty...
You should be
pleased
proud
about
of that.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you are. Now that we've heard Dorothy's story, did she have a life of achievement, a life of fulfillment? Or did she have both? What do you think? I want you to just relate that back to your own life and the things that you strive for in life and how that compares with the whole concept of happiness. That's where it all starts. Anyhow, you could say perhaps that Dorothy's had a charmed life in retirement. And if you think that, I want you to think about this. Did that happen to her, or did it happen because of her? As Dorothy herself says, she has no money, but I personally have rarely met someone who's so upbeat and so loving and so positive all the time. I've known her for perhaps 18 years, and I've seen her stressed and I've seen her worried. I have never, I don't think, seen Dorothy angry. It's amazing. Again, I'll leave it to you to think about the reasons for her attitude and the influences that she has had on her life. If you'd like to comment on any of the aspects of what you've heard today, about history, about clothing, about the influences on your life, just leave a comment at the bottom of the page in the reply box, and I'd be very grateful if you'd press the share button at the bottom of the page. If you want to contact me, email me at henry@retiredexcited.com. Hope you've enjoyed this episode. I love talking to Dorothy. I always get a buzz out of talking to Dorothy. And that is it for today. So thank you for listening, and I'll see you next week.
I like that.
I'm going to give that a go for sure.
Ian Roberts was terrific.
That was interesting. What a good idea.